violence is not going to give us any solution to the problems that Hong Kong is facing.
But violence did step up in Hong Kong Monday. We'll tell you all about it. This is Tuesday, November 12th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Also ahead, the U.S. High Court could take up a case that could impact the future of hundreds of thousands of people brought to the United States as children illegally. And as Australia battles fires that threaten its main city, a town in the U.S. remembers a fire that wiped out what was their further homes. Comes your way all on today's VOA Asia. Following a day of violence in which one person was shot by police and another set on fire, Hong Kong's leader Monday pledged to spare no effort to halt anti-government protests that have racked that city for more than 5 months. The comments by Carrie Lam are likely to fuel speculation that harsher legal and police measures may be in the works.
If there is still any wishful thinking that by escalating violence, the Hong Kong SAR government will yield to pressure to satisfy the so-called political demands, I'm making this statement clear and loud here. That will not happen. Violence is not going to give us any solution to the problems that Hong Kong is facing. Our joint priority now, as a city, is to end the violence.
It did not end. Following Lam's comments, confrontations between protesters and police continued into the night, with black-clad demonstrators torching at least one vehicle and blocking an intersection in the Mong Kok district that has been the scene of many clashes. A taxi driver was taken away by ambulance with head wounds, although it wasn't immediately clear how he had been injured. VOA's Steve Miller spoke Monday with reporter Justin Solomon in Hong Kong.
It started at 7 a.m. local time this morning. So protesters had called for a general strike, and they've done this before. They've tried to stop transportation, tried to encourage people not to go to work. And this morning, they were out in these pockets and very much in cat and mouse, where they would just appear randomly. And at one location this morning, around 7:15 in the morning, protesters were setting up a roadblock and clashed with a traffic police officer, and that officer drew his service weapon. And in video, you can see a protester reach for that weapon, and the officer fired three shots in total. One of them hit the protester. The other two, we're not sure where those went. And the protester was taken to the hospital. Now, later in the morning, a police officer on a motorcycle was videotaped doing circles around protesters, at one point appearing to run over several of them. In a press conference later in the day, the police came out and said that officer from the motorcycle incident has been suspended from frontline duties and that they'll be investigating it. Now, there's two other incidents in the day. Another one happened later in the morning where protesters lit a man on fire. They threw a chemical on him and lit that on fire, and he reportedly has suffered second-degree burns on 30% of his body. And another big incident in the day happened at around lunchtime in central Hong Kong. And central is, you can think of it as sort of the Wall Street of Hong Kong, where all of the financial headquarters are and all of these bankers go to work every day. And around lunchtime, when everybody was out, it was a beautiful day, protesters started and all of the workers started to join in when they went out for their lunch break. And the police fired tear gas in central Hong Kong. Many people in suits and ties were victim of that tear gas, and they quickly tried to disperse into some of these luxurious shopping malls in central Hong Kong to escape the tear gas. And it was quite a scene to see, where you have regular protesters in their normal black-clad outfits that they've been wearing, and just regular Joes that are going to work or having their lunch and got caught up in this and really didn't mean to.
You just described a myriad of activity. But I want to focus for a second on the shooting, because the police have said there is an investigation going into that incident, although they did defend the officer's actions. But what's been the reaction to people in Hong Kong, especially among the protesters who saw this happen, who, you know, shared the video?
The reaction to the shooting in Hong Kong is similar to what we've been hearing and seeing for other incidents, not shooting related, but incidents involving the police, which is the police took it a step or two too far. The protester was unarmed, and that the police overreacted, and they did not need to use a firearm in the incident. And truthfully, what will happen now is there will be more retaliation, more protest to this particular incident because of it.
What's that going to do to everything that's going on in Hong Kong? Because Chief Executive Carrie Lam came out and said the violence needs to stop escalating. The escalation of violence is not going to change the SAR's government position. So what's going to happen?
Well, you're sort of at a standstill, I suppose, where, you know, the protesters want change. The government says we can't do this change, and violence is certainly not going to help. And so this back and forth appears to be something that will continue for the foreseeable future. Of course, Chief Executive Carrie Lam has said, as you mentioned, violence will not solve anything here. But in the protesters' minds, when there is violence on the end of the police, like the shooting that we saw today, they will retaliate with their own sort of violence. That might be more roadblocks, more petrobombs, more bricks and rocks throwing at the police when police come out to stop these protests as they happen.
As we move forward to this week, this is just Monday, what do people around the world need to keep an eye on in terms of what's going to happen next?
Well, there's already a call for a similar action Tuesday morning, similar to what we saw today. Will that happen in as great of a number that we saw today? I'm not sure. We've seen this before where they try to get back-to-back, get protesters out back-to-back days, and generally it slows down on a second day. They take a little bit of a break. We will see protests again this coming weekend, though. That is nearly certain. And, of course, we have the district elections coming up on November 24th, which has already been a cause for concern and will continue to be so as that approaches.
Reporter Justin Solomon in Hong Kong talking with VOA International Edition host Steve Miller. You are invited to read more on the developing story from Hong Kong by following us on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the voanews.com website. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now at voanews.com. A Malaysian court has ordered former Prime Minister Najib Razak to present his defense against 7 charges in a case linked to a scandal surrounding state investment fund IMDB, saying a unit had been created for his own private advantage. The Cambodian opposition leader Kem Sokha met with the French ambassador after Kem Sokha's house arrest was lifted. However, he remains charged with treason and he's banned from leaving Cambodia. Amid tensions with Taiwan, China appears to be flexing its political muscle by capturing a growing number of Taiwanese for suspected political crimes. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia and the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. The U.S. Supreme Court will take a case November 12th that could impact the future of hundreds of thousands of people brought to the U.S. as children illegally. In particular, one doctor who is on track to finish his residency training in the state of California could have his fate determined by the outcome. VOA's Warakana Chumchuan reports from San Francisco.
Jirayutlati Wongskorn's parents did not legally immigrate to the United States when they brought him to the U.S. as a child. He is now doing his medical training in America under the Obama-era program called Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, or DACA. DACA granted legal protections and work authorization to between 700 and 800,000 people who were brought into the U.S. as children illegally.
DACA has opened doors for me in a significant way. It is allowing me to become a doctor.
But his plan could be in jeopardy. In September 2017, the Trump administration proposed canceling DACA arguing that President Obama has overreached and single-handedly legislated on immigration.
The executive branch, through DACA, deliberately sought to achieve what the legislative branch specifically refused to authorize on multiple occasions.
More than 2 years later, the U.S. Supreme Court will hear three consolidated lawsuits fighting to keep DACA intact. Lati Wongsgon is a plaintiff in one of them.
การที่นิวได้มาอยู่ถึงจุดนี้นะได้เรียนมาเป็นหมอคือไม่ได้ทำคนเดียวเลยทั้งสิ้นมีคน
I have the privilege to train to become a doctor to live in America, but I didn't do it on my own. I have relied on the support of my family and friends who are undocumented. I believed it's my responsibility to join them in a fight to keep DACA.
The 1997 Asian financial crisis crushed his parents' real estate business. So they came to California on six-month tourist visas, found work in restaurant, and then overstayed their visas.
This is home.
In March 1999, then 9 years old, the young man arrived on a visit with two older siblings.
ในห้องเล็กๆเนี่ยที่อยู่ด้วยกัน5คนนะครับเขาก็บอกว่าเราจะไม่กลับไปเมืองไทยแล้ว
I remember that five of us had a talk in our tiny apartment. My parents said we are not going to go back to Thailand. I remember thinking, what about my friends, my toys?
Lati Wongsgon's family, who calls him by the nickname New, kept a low profile. He studied hard and went on to graduate from two prestigious American universities, UC Berkeley and Harvard University. UCSF School of Medicine accepted him in 2012, a month before the Obama administration announced DACA. This May, Lati Wongsgon became the first known medical student to graduate in the school's 155-year history, who is in the country illegally.
What has been so beautiful and powerful about New's journey is that every single step of the way that he has tried to reach his goals, he has made sure that he is systematically trying to reduce barriers for others to follow the same path that he is trying to follow.
The Supreme Court's decision on DACA is expected by next summer. If it's removed, Congress could take action by passing immigration reform or the DREAM Act, which would grant citizenship to some qualifying immigrants who came to the U.S. illegally. But that's something neither the Bush nor Obama administration was able to accomplish. Warangkana Chomchun, VOA News.
Happening now in South Asia, a blanket of smog has once again enshrouded India's capital after a weekend of clearer air and better weather. The morning air quality index Monday at the U.S. Embassy in New Delhi was 497. Air quality between 301 and 500 is considered hazardous for all. It is not measured past 500. You're listening to VOA Asia. Australian officials are warning of catastrophic fire danger as dozens of bushfires blazed in the state of New South Wales. New South Wales Premier Gladys Berejiklian declared a state of emergency Monday, a declaration which gives firefighters broad powers to control government resources, force evacuations, close roads, and shut down utilities will stay in place for at least a week. Shane Fitzsimmons, the New South Wales Rural Fire Service Commissioner, had a status update on the fires.
We can expect to see the alert levels increase on a number of these fires up in northern New South Wales. The conditions are still extremely dry. The fire behaviour is still quite volatile. And there are still lots of communities in the northeast of the state that remain at risk today.
The conditions are expected to worsen as high temperatures and gusting winds are forecast for Tuesday. Three people have been confirmed dead. More than 150 homes have been destroyed by wildfires in New South Wales since last Friday. Coming up, a sad memorial to an entire U.S. town lost in a wildfire. This is VOA Asia.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook. VOA Asia is also on Twitter and YouTube. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, read, and share all the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news, information, and great features.
More news from VOA Asia. The U.S. dollar was broadly lower Monday after President Donald Trump said over the weekend that trade talks with China were moving along very nicely, but the United States would only make a deal with Beijing if it was right for America. Visit VOA Asia Facebook every day for top stories and great features to see and share. It has been over a year when residents of small town Paradise in Northern California were caught in a disaster they'll never forget. Paradise and adjacent areas caught fire. The raging blaze killed 84 people and displaced more than 50,000. Chico, a neighboring city, became home to thousands of these displaced persons. VOA's Nabat Malik has the story of how one Pakistani-American woman and the city's Muslim community stepped up to help.
For the residents of California State's Paradise Town, November 8, 2018 began like any other day. But very quickly, things changed.
We never got a warning. There was no phone call or text message alert. But we just saw black clouds. And a friend of us told us we needed to leave, but we thought it was crazy.
I knew something was coming. I saw it glowing red and orange off of my back deck.
Starting around 6:30 in the morning, it was reported to be the deadliest wildfire in 2018, taking 84 lives and displacing thousands. Not having a destination, residents had to flee, leaving everything behind.
So many people who were uninsured or underinsured, and already our county services were stretched thin.
Just down from hills of Paradise lies a small city called Chico. Rubina Khan, a Pakistani-American and a Chico resident, knew she had to do something to help.
First of all, I called Rasha and said, "Sister, get ready. We have to do a lot. It's an enormous disaster, yet people do not know how serious the matter is." Initially, her and everyone else thought I was exaggerating, and there was no need to open a shelter for the needy.
We were giving out clothing, toiletries, food, gift cards. And right at the end, we were helping people who ever found an apartment and a place to stay.
Approximately 26,500 Paradise residents were displaced in Chico. A large number of them were elderly.
Here with non-perishable food items.
Rubina, with the help of a local Muslim community, arranged distribution of relief goods, and both Rubina and Rasha continued helping for the next 3 months. A year later, members of the Muslim community believe the fire brought everyone closer together.
The reality of our life over here has changed. We have gone from a community that was kind of separate and secluded in Chico area from Paradise, Megalia, Concow, and various areas that got burned, to a community where everybody feels like part of the same exact thing.
Because of all the political issues we've had in this world and in this town, so us stepping up and helping had made it, I think, had made our town a better place to live in.
What came out of that was that people who had the misconception that Muslims are terrorists, they saw for the first time that a Muslim is like any other human being and that they care about humanity. Religion is second, humanity is first.
In the wake of devastating loss, a united community carries on. Nukhbat Malik, VOA News, Chico, California.
Here's a news break from VOA Asia. The U.S. Federal Aviation Administration Monday downgraded Malaysia's air safety rating, restricting the country's airlines from adding new flights to the United States. This rating is based on Malaysia's aviation oversight regime and is an assessment of the country's civil aviation authority. This is VOA Asia. Studies show when people pet an animal, their blood pressure goes down, along with stress and anxiety. That is why therapy dogs are increasingly found in schools, counseling centers, even in hospitals. VOA's Carol Pearson reports on two hospitals that use therapy dogs to help patients on their medical journey.
This is Taz, an Australian shepherd who works at the University of Missouri Hospital.
Hello.
He gets a lot of attention, and he loves the attention.
Taz is a therapy dog who provides comfort and emotional support. In addition to reducing blood pressure, dogs in hospitals seem to elevate patients' moods and may even reduce their perception of pain.
I think sometimes patients feel isolated. They get out here, it's lonely, it's boring, and the dogs are something to look forward to, and when they visit, the whole unit comes alive.
I was really excited because I haven't seen a dog in a really long time. It made me happy. I didn't think about my pain. I didn't think about what else was going to happen.
Therapy dogs are in every unit at Johns Hopkins Hospital, including intensive care. But actual research about how they impact patients is lacking. Megan Hosey, a psychologist at Hopkins, has initiated a study to see if they improve patients' well-being. Hosey helped write an article for a medical journal on this topic nearly 2 years ago.
Our review of previous literature found that patients who are in settings like hospitals, nursing homes, and psychiatric facilities have benefits from working with therapy animals that include improved mood, reductions in pain, improvements in heart rate and heart rate variability, and just general better engagement with their medical care. Yeah.
This patient wrote about Molly, the therapy dog, who visited her the day we stopped by at the hospital.
When I was rushed to the hospital last Thursday, my dog was so confused, cried for 7 days.
Molly is Marlena Casey's dog.
We went through training for about 3 years, both in classes and then alone by myself, and she passed her test in April.
Casey says patients tell Molly things they haven't even told their nurses or doctors. Those big brown eyes seem to inspire an element of trust. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
At the dawn of the 20th century, a railway was born. It connected Austria and Germany with a major port on the Adriatic Sea. The railway carried critical World War I supplies, but it fell out of favor by the 1940s. VOA's Arash Arabasadi takes us on a coal-powered ride on a train that tourism might just save.
A piece of history chugs along the Sulcan Bridge in western Slovenia.
This railway was built in the beginning of the 20th century as a main line, as a part of the so-called Alpine Railways program.
That program on the Bohinj Railway aimed to connect western Austria and southern Germany with the port of Trieste. During the First World War, the railway carried the majority of military supplies to the Isonzo Front, the battleground for Austro-Hungarian and Italian armies.
This railway lost its importance and became practically a local railway line. But nowadays, it is getting even more important for tourism.
Slovenia joined the European Union in 2004. The railway became a convenient passenger and freight route from Central and Eastern Europe to Trieste.
It's really jump into the history. That's what, especially now when Japanese came, it's so strange for them.
This tour guide says the challenge is getting customers on board the train.
They look to details at the train and they talk with the people who are actually driving still this train.
The Bohinj Railway, that once delivered supplies in battles against Italian armies, now delivers actors playing Italian soldiers in battlefield reenactments. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News, Washington.
Chinese e-commerce giants Alibaba and JD.com reported more than $60 billion in sales Monday on Singles Day, an annual marketing event that is the world's busiest online shopping day. You've been listening to VOA Asia. Thank you for joining us. Thank you to our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, John Ellison, our managing director, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team of Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane, and our interns, Hyung, Afra, and Candace. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Have a wonderful day ahead.